Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Community Geek Podcast. My name is Katie Kobe, and I'm head of training for Feverbee Limited. I train community managers in the art of community building using proven social science techniques. In the Community Geek Podcast, I'll share tools and techniques that you can use in your daily community management efforts. Listen weekly to get new tips, industry news, and hear stories from guest practitioners to help you become the best community manager in the business. Make sure you subscribe for the free updates and get all of the resources we mention in the podcast and our show notes. The show notes are published weekly at communitygeek.com/podcast. So today, I'm very pleased to welcome Philippe Baudet, Director of Community Advocacy for the Wikimedia Foundation. Welcome, Philippe.
Hi, thanks. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, we're so happy to have you. So Philippe is actually one of our wonderful speakers who will be presenting at our Sprint conference in San Francisco in October. So we're going to be chatting a little bit about that today, among some other things. Definitely make sure you visit sprint.feverbee.com to register if you haven't yet already. But to give you some background, Philippe first joined the Wikimedia Foundation back in 2009 as a facilitator of the strategic planning project. In 2010, he led the annual giving campaign, raising more than $30 million in the shortest fundraising campaign that the foundation has ever had. In February 2012, he was promoted to the Director of Community Advocacy role and assigned to the Legal and Community Advocacy team, where he and his team lead strategic change management and work to support Wikimedia's community of editors, curators, and archivists who bring the site to more than 500 million people each month. In addition, his team also handles trust and safety issues, child protection, and manages a far-flung portfolio of other activities, including most of Wikimedia's customer service-like functions, which are typically staffed by volunteers. So really impressive background and really impressive role. And I guess to get started, I would love to hear a bit more about, you know, as Director of Community Advocacy, what does your day-to-day look like? What are the types of things that your team is directly responsible for? Do you focus on all of your Wikimedia portfolio properties or only certain sites? How does it work for you on a day-to-day basis?
Well, you know, the mandate of the community advocacy team at the Wikimedia Foundation is to support foundation initiatives with a focus on community consultations, on governance, and on training. Mm-hmm. The Wikimedia Foundation, you may or may not know, is the umbrella organization that exists to support, protect, and defend Wikipedia and its sister sites.
Right.
So we actually have, people think of one Wikipedia. They don't realize we have 298 Wikipedias, or Wikipedia in 298 different languages, and each one has its own community. They're distinct. They have their own set of articles. So we do a lot of support for them. In addition to that, we have a ton of other projects, Wiktionary, Wikimedia Commons, Wikinews, a whole slew of them. So our total site portfolio is around 900 wikis, 900 communities.
How do you handle that?
I drink a lot. It's a hard challenge, particularly because my team is so small. There's only five of us right now. And only two of us are in the San Francisco office. The other three work remotely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our day to day can just be incredibly varied. I mean, on any given day, I could start out speaking with volunteers around the world about a major change in how we engage with them. Then I'd go to working with our legal team to sort through some alleged copyright violations. By the way, we find almost every time that there's no copyright violation on our part, and that in most cases, the person writing to complain actually copied from us. I could be plotting to learn more about our editing community in any given language, mm-hmm. or, you know, working with my colleagues on other teams to onboard new staff and get them a basic level knowledge of the Wikimedia communities. So, I like to joke, my job description and that of my team is yes, and other duties as assigned.
That's incredible. I mean, all of these people, I mean, 900 different communities and easily, you know, hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of members within each community. And only five of you, I take back everything I've ever said about feeling like I don't have enough help with the volume of community managers that I'm working with. That's just really, really incredible.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, because of that scale, we really focus on things that are force extenders for us and things that we can use technology to simplify mm-hmm. our workflows.
Yeah. So I would love to hear a little bit more about that technology and about scaling a little bit. Like I know that communicating with community members is pretty much the number one role for all of us who work in the community space. So what do you guys use to, you know, to get the word out? do you rely on people just reporting things to you, or do you proactively reach out? How does that whole process look?
That's a great question. So, I mean, first, I think it's important to do some level setting. We did talk, you know, we mentioned that we have 900 wikis, roughly. Mm-hmm. Each one's got its own community and local governance structures. 298 languages, 80,000 active volunteers every month, 80,000 people who write, edit, and curate content for nearly 500 million users globally every month. So we've got scale.
Right.
But that means that our problems have scale too. Mm-hmm. So when I started at the Wikimedia Foundation 5 years ago, our communication methods for communicating with our community were essentially the virtual version of a PA system and a classroom. We could do live interactive chats, and we could broadcast messages at the top of the pages of our sites mm-hmm. from date X to date Y. But that's like using a cannon to hit a gnat. I mean, it's just massive overkill.
Right.
So since then, we've gotten a lot smarter. We've gotten much more strategic about how we operate. We've developed maps of our online communities that help us to determine who the critical influencers in those communities are, and then we reach out to them. Mm-hmm. I've got 5 years worth of personal relationships built, and most of my team has years and years of their own history. And we've got a pretty efficient CRM that we use to retrieve details about things.
Okay.
I mean, we've refined our banner system, so now we can, in addition to showing banners from date X to date Y, we can also limit the number of times that you see a banner, which we were never able to do before. We introduce notifications. So when somebody wants to talk about you, you get a little red number up in the right-hand corner of the screen, just like Facebook or one of those. That's been a huge success. So we're trying to find tools that allow us to scale and scale intelligently and scale our work as well. Mm-hmm. And one of the great things about the Wikimedia Foundation is that we're constantly looking for innovative and creative ways to efficiently and in a targeted way reach groups of people. So it's been an interesting process for us to determine what works and what doesn't, and we're still not getting it quite right. Mm-hmm. But we do focus pretty heavily on finding the influencers, not necessarily the most active people, but the most influential ones in any community, and reaching out to them.
Can you talk a little bit more about your process for finding these influencers? Like, do you have a proprietary sort of like criteria that you go off of? How do you determine influence within the community?
Yeah, no, proprietary criteria, that sort of thing, that's for the for-profit guys with the big money. what we do, it's actually pretty simple. We run a database query that lets us see how many times a user talked to another user, every user, and their number of communications with every other user. And then we import that into a free program called Gephi, which is an open source mapping program. Mm-hmm. And it creates these fantastic maps for us. Which I'm going to show off at Feverbee Sprint, that let us zoom in on individual community members and see how close they are in social influence to other community members. The trick for us is separating out social influence from editing work. So you can be talking to somebody because you're editing an article about something, but that's not necessarily social influence. So we've had to do some creative things about what we track and what we don't track for this purpose and how we use it.
So would you say that understanding database queries is a hugely important part of your role and your team's role?
Of my team's role, sure.
Absolutely. I saw a post, I think it was on one of the Facebook groups a few weeks ago, about someone saying that like being able to understand SQL queries should be like a required part of every community manager's job description. So
I don't know about that. I think it's important that you be able to decipher it. Mm-hmm. So you can sort of tell in a pinch what it is you're pulling. But actually sitting down and writing queries from scratch, nah, I think that's a waste of time. We've got people who are better qualified to do that than me. Why should I waste my time on it?
Exactly. You should just be deciphering it.
Right. That's, exactly.
That makes a ton of sense. So these maps, you said it was Gephi.
Gephi, G-E-P-H-I.
G-E-P-H-I. Okay, I'm going to have to look that one up, and I will include it in the show notes so that people can check it out. But that sounds
and
really interesting.
You what, Kate, the other thing I'll do, Katie, is I'll send you the link to our community maps so you can see them, because at the Wikimedia Foundation, everything we do is released under a free license.
Oh, great.
So folks can actually go in and see my community maps and play with them a little.
Perfect. I will include that link, and then everyone can check that out and see. Because those maps sound like, especially when you're operating at such a big scale, those maps seem like they're hugely, hugely important to be able to visualize all of those, you know, rows of data that you're going to be looking at.
They really are. And it's interesting, particularly if you look at the maps for different communities as they age and mature, and you can see patterns starting to emerge about what communities look through at certain stages in their life cycle, what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really fascinating. If you're a data geek like I am, it'll make you very, very happy.
I would love it. So we've got our own, you know, community life cycle here at Feverbee that we practice and preach. And so I would love to see some of those and be able to show what a map looks like at each of the different stages, whether it's around in the inception stage or the mitosis stage. I think it would be really, really interesting to see that visually. Great. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. Sure. So my next question, you had mentioned like finding these sort of influencers. So a lot of people that I've spoken with who are at larger organizations and having to operate at scale, they very much tend to focus on their sort of top users, and however way they define that, it could be by activity, it could be, you know, they're influential, it could be that they have sort of like a community council of people that they've already vetted. And so when they're working on projects with the community, they tend to, most of like the one-to-one communication happens through this sort of smaller group. And then once they've got buy-in of that group, that's when they start to communicate more broadly to everyone else. Is that how things work for you and your team? How do you get sort of like a broader look of what everyone is saying?
You know, it really sort of depends on the situation. With 900 communities, if there's a pretty good chance that if I drop into a community, I'm not going to know anybody there.
Right.
And somebody who is a high volume editor on this small community would not even beep my radar screen on the English Wikipedia. So there's a lot of level setting of figuring out, it doesn't matter to me whether they're a power user to me. It matters whether they're a power user in that community. So that's why I look at the community influence maps to figure out who those people are. And then I just, Google Translate is my best friend. I'm telling you. I get the ability to go in and just start digging through their administrative pages and figuring out what's going on, because there's just no way I can keep track of it all.
Right.
So every time I go to a new community, it's a whole new learning experience. And sometimes it's a whole new learning experience in a language that Google Translate doesn't support, which gets really fun. We're frequently finding somebody, if we're like, we're talking to somebody, or we need to go look at the Wolof community for some reason. We go look. And Wolof Wikibooks, which I don't even know if we have as a project, is having a problem. And they've got two administrators, and one of them speaks French. Well, I don't speak French, but I know somebody who does. And she also speaks Wolof. And all of a sudden we have, you know, we're starting to create bridges and get understanding. But a lot of it is very one-to-one communication, like you said, with whatever the power user dynamic is in that community.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that in mind, because we're also operating at scale, I have to always be thinking about, is there a way I can do this, number one, in a defined, repeatable fashion so I can automate the heck out of it?
Mm-hmm.
Or B, is there a way that I can do this and create something that's going to turn this into a one-to-many broadcast communication opportunity for us? If there's some way I can do this so other communities learn from this, that saves me having to go fix it there too.
Right.
So it's really a combination of the things that we deal with. You know, every issue is different.
So what are then some of, I guess, I mean, that sounds like you've mentioned a couple of challenges of sort of operating at scale, like the big one being you needing to automate more and more and more so that you can put more preventative measures in place. Mm-hmm. But can you speak to any of the other challenges that, you know, you encounter aside from, you know, like translations or, you know, simply just like not having enough manpower?
Well, one of the biggest things that we have to deal with actually is kind of ironic. We have too much data. We track, at the Wikimedia Foundation, we track almost nothing about users, but that doesn't mean that data isn't generated. We have, you know, page view logs, and we have, you know, everything that we need to know to run a typical website we've got. Mm-hmm. We can still track people's identities on site. So figuring out what data we're going to use to look at something is critical, because if we think a metric is telling us one thing and it's actually telling us something different, it sort of shakes our core assumptions. So one of the hardest things that we have to do is sort through these huge buckets of data and figure out what's really important to us. And are we looking at the right thing here? Once we get past that, our biggest challenge, bar none, is a social challenge. And that is, dealing with different community standards in the real world, the offline world. So things that in Europe are a big deal, mm-hmm. for instance, the right to privacy and the right to be forgotten, mm-hmm. are very different in the United States or in Japan. And figuring out what the cultural context for a particular decision is, and knowing that we don't always understand it and we're not gonna understand it, is one of the harder parts of our job.
Right.
And then probably the scariest thing about operating at scale like this is we're playing without a net. If I screw up and kill the English Wikipedia community, we've done something really awful. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to do than you would think. I know, for instance, that right now the capacity of the English Wikipedia to absorb newcomers sits at around 1,800 people at the same time. We can absorb about 1,800 new people at any given time and still handle acclimatization and cultural norming. Mm-hmm. And the way I know that is because we tried to do it with 2,000 at one point using a targeted university outreach program, and we nearly broke the community. So it's there is no net, and that's scary.
Yeah, I could imagine that that's a lot of pressure to operate under.
It is. You know, I don't sleep a whole lot, but the reality is that the benefits of doing this work are so there's such a massive payoff. I mean, I when I'm hiring people or when I'm interviewing people, I say, look, at the Wikimedia Foundation, you are changing the way that the world deals with information. You're going to get one chance in your life if you're lucky to do that. Take advantage of it. Run with it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, frankly, I my community, these are people who got together and decided to write an encyclopedia for fun. We're geeks, right? I mean, we are uber geeks. But if you imagine being in a great big room with 80,000 people, every one of whom has always been the smartest kid in the room, that's the environment I work in. And I wouldn't change that for anything.
It sounds really, really incredible. So yeah. What are some of the other, I guess, achievements that you would be really, really proud of what either the community has achieved or what you've been able to do with the community and for the community? Obviously not breaking it is a very big one, but yeah. What are some of the other achievements that you're really proud of?
Oh, you know, in 5 years, there've been so many to choose from. I think the biggest one may be my first one, wrangling a group of over 1,000 volunteers in 100 languages to collaboratively write a 5-year strategic plan for the Wikimedia movement. That took us a year, but we did it. I like to think back fondly on advocating for sane policies around community engagement and setting up some best practices for when something actually is a crisis versus when it just looks like a crisis.
Right.
I think working to set up a disciplined A/B testing methodology to test our fundraising banners, which, you know, doubled the money in a shorter time period than ever before was huge. And I think probably the biggest achievement for me, I'm proud that in a period when we needed to divert money to stabilize our engineering our infrastructure, which was corroding underneath us, mm-hmm. in a period when we were doing that, I managed to make sure that our leadership always keeps one eye on the community and tripled the size of my team at the same time. These are all, you know, I guess they're all sort of pointed at a common factor, though, which is that I'm proud of the fact that we support and amplify the work of our volunteers. We don't even pretend to be community managers. Nobody's managing this community.
Right.
And nobody's made that accusation in a long time. We're community advocates. We like it that way. That's probably my biggest achievement.
Yep. It really sounds that like you really just sort of like support and do everything you can to let the community almost advance itself in a way.
That's the philosophy. That's exactly it.
That when it's done really, really well, you can just sort of like slip into the background and just really help them and help the community become who it is and who they want to be.
Yep. And the more I can automate, the more I can get out of the way, and the more I can create these best practices, the closer I am to my eventual goal, which is to retire to a desert island and drink the daiquiris.
I love that goal. That's my own secret goal personally.
Excellent.
Yes. I can't wait till I can get my own island somewhere with unlimited umbrella drinks. It sounds like a great time.
Gotta have them. It's a must.
Absolutely. So if we can talk a little bit more about some of these big achievements, I mean, this may be something you cover in your sprint talk. I'm not too sure, but wrangling, you know, your volunteers, however many you said, like thousands with over 100 different languages into writing a strategic plan.
Yep.
Can you give any like high level insight into how you did that, you know, what the goal was for doing that. I think it's always really important for the community to come together and collaborate on its own, you know, governments and structure and policies. But what was sort of like the driver for that initiative? And then how did you go about kicking it off?
Well, the driver was our executive director looked around and realized that she was leading a tiny little organization at the time, you know, about 30 employees, and trying to run the fifth most popular internet family properties in the world. And she didn't have a mandate to go and do. There was so much argument over what we were to go and do that she couldn't actually go and do anything. So she thought a strategic planning process would help with this. But she knew that any strategic planning process that was driven by our board and top down would not be in keeping with the Wikimedia spirit right. of, you know, bottom up governance. So she decided to let's take this out for a test ride. Let's see what happens. Let's put the strategic planning process on a wiki and see if we can make it work. We worked with the Bridgespan Group and a fantastic consultant named Eugene Eric Kim in San Francisco, who helped us to structure a process where the community initially sent us all their ideas for things that Wikimedia could do to be even better. Mm-hmm. And then we formed task groups that would narrow those down to a base set of recommendations based on research and solid thinking. We then took a deep dive into that and tried to emerge from that with a consensus-driven strategic plan with a few goals. We got five goals out of it, or five strategic priorities out of it. And I'll tell you, we knew we weren't going to hit most of them. The idea was to give us something that was a serious reach. Mm-hmm. We're in the fifth year of the strategic planning process, and we're not going to hit them. Mm-hmm. But that's okay. At this point, we're starting to set our goals for our next 3 years, and we learned from what we did last time. And it gave the movement direction. It gave Sue, the executive director at the time, the mandate to get out there and hire people and do stuff. Mm-hmm. And it gave us all permission to dream big.
Mm-hmm. And how did the community, I mean, once you got this plan sort of like put in place and said, okay, this is, you know, what we've talked about, this is what you've helped us come up with. How did the community like at large embrace that plan? Were they generally, you know, like supportive of it? Did they all agree?
Well, 80,000 people are never going to all agree on anything.
Right.
But, one of the smartest things we did was the back page of the strategic plan has a list of the authors of the plan. So 1,000 people by Wikimedia usernames listed on the back page. That was enough to get mandate and buy-in from most of our editing community.
Right.
They looked there and they said, I know these people. I recognize these names. These are people I work with every day. They yep. were involved. I trust it.
Yep. That's
and that
huge.
Was good enough. And then we took it and we ran with it and we tried to execute. And we found some things we did wrong and we found some goals that we thought were important that weren't. And, you know, now we're starting again, the next plan.
That's crazy. Are you going to follow sort of a similar process with getting, maybe it's not the same 1,000 people, but getting the community involved to sort of set the direction for the next 3 years?
Well, the community it's definitely a community-facing, community-informed plan, but this time it's not going to be written by 1,000 volunteers, because that didn't prove to be a very efficient way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And volunteer attention is a zero-sum game. If I take volunteer attention to do this, I'm taking it away from the thing they want to do, which is write an encyclopedia.
Right.
So it maybe wasn't, that's one of the things we learned the first time around, that it maybe wasn't the most efficient way to do it. So what we're doing now is we're starting with a core group of people within the foundation, not board members, but staff members,
mm-hmm.
Who are creating an idea and then expanding it in concentric circles to wider and wider groups until eventually it's expanded to the whole community for input and feedback. And we will at that point have what I believe will be a consensus-driven strategic plan just bubbling out rather than coalescing in.
Gotcha. Well, I'll be really interested to see how that turns out.
I think it's going to be interesting. And I'm not sure exactly yet what my role in it is going to be, but I've been told that there will be one. So I think I get the feeling I'm going to be living strategy again for a little while.
Ooh, good. I'll have to follow up with you in a few months and see where you're at with things and how it's going.
Yeah.
So we're getting sort of close to the end of time, and I wanted to make sure that we had a few minutes to talk about Sprint and what you're going to be doing. So all I know is that you're going to be talking about building a loyal army of volunteers. Do you have any sort of like a sneak peek or anything related to the talk that you can share with people today?
Sure. So I've been, when I was thinking about this, I thought about what's a loyal army, and it took me to the Roman Legion. So I'm going to talk a bit about a Roman legionnaire and how his bosses, his centurions, had to ask themselves a number of the same questions that we as community members should routinely be asking ourselves about our volunteers. Mm-hmm. Are we arming them with the right tools? Are we giving them skilled and talented people to work with? Do they know what their career path is? Mm-hmm. And how are we planning to handle that marauding gang of Visigoths, a disruptive force that's just over the next hill?
Oh my gosh, that sounds like it's going to be really fun. I love that you're managing to tie community and the Roman Empire together. I think that's going to be interesting.
One of the slides is called Lessons from the Year XLVIII.
What does that translate to?
That would be 48, I believe.
Oh my gosh. Yep. Wow. Well, that's going to be really, really fun to hear you talk and to hear you to go into some of the details about that. And I'm personally, like, my background is I've spent a lot of time working with brands. And so while I've had some volunteers, it's never been at the scale of obviously something like the Wikimedia community or, you know, some of the other really big communities out there. So I'm always curious when people get to talk a lot about their volunteer programs and supporting them and mobilizing them and, you know, everything that you do that keeps people's attention. Cause you're right. Attention is very much a zero sum game. It's either you or someone else or something else. So, you have to make sure that it's in everyone's best interest and that the balance is always there.
Well, and I'm particularly lucky to get to work with 80,000 of these people who I'm in awe of every day, the product that they write, the thing they put out, that this accidental transformational tool. I'm honored to get to do it. And I'm thrilled to come talk to Fever Bee Sprint about it.
Oh, good. We're so glad to have you. And I can't wait for everyone else to hear the talk. And it's just going to be fantastic. I'm so excited about Sprint. So anyway, well, that basically wraps up our time for today. So, Philippe, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. It's so great to chat with you in person for once. I've heard your name around. And so it's nice to meet you in that sense. Definitely for everyone who's listening, the episode will be posted on Community Geek, communitygeek.com/podcast, along with the show notes. So I will make sure I post a link to Philippe's community map and Gaffey and some of the other resources that we mentioned there today. I'll also include a link to Philippe's Twitter handle so you can give him a shout and say hello and thank you. And don't forget sprint.fevery.com. Register, come to the conference. You won't regret it. You're going to hear from some really, really amazing speakers, and it's just going to be a good time. So thank you so much, everyone. And thank you, Philippe, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks.